and welcome to The Two Tones. Tony Moakley, myself, and Tony DeVolfo.
Greetings, Tony. How are you?
I'm very well.
Lovely to hear.
It's The Two Tones, episode 1-2, episode 12. Let's go through some of the names just quickly, Tone.
Thought you'd never ask, Tone. Episode Bear Gleason, premiership player, of course, in 1987.
Still a part of the club?
Still a part of the club. Although, I think, yes, he's relinquishing duties as committeeman to the great C. Judd, is he not? Had a great stint on the board at the Carlton Club. Barry Armstrong, record holder in the Guernsey, number 12, 204 games.
I had his footy card once upon a time.
Yes, yeah, great player. Honest player in the midfield for the club.
Yeah.
And if you go back, right the way back to a chap named George Chalice, 50 games in the number 12 Guernsey, from 1912 through to 15, was a part of the 1915 Premiership team, and then sadly was killed in global conflict within probably 7 or 8 months of that grand final. One of our great fallen here at Carlton, George Chalice.
Who was, and I'm very proud to say, at the entrance to Icon Park here at this great ground, suitably memorialised with a lovely stone and the names of every Carlton player who has fallen in combat. And I just think that is enormously to the credit of this great club. Tone, can we please mention an absolute favourite of mine in the number 12, Matty Skinny Lappin.
What a player, Tone. And, you know, thinking of Skinny, the aptly named Skinny Lappin, thoughts turn to a player like Simo. You know, how does a person of diminutive stature play the game for so long at that level and emerge unscathed? It defies logic to me. And yet he was a player that, you know, he was just such a great competitor through so many seasons at the Carlton Club. We're very lucky to get him, of course, from St Kilda.
From St Kilda, yep.
Yeah, but what a player he was. And as far as I know, emerged pretty much unscathed. You know, physically he wasn't knocked around. So hopefully he has many, many more years ahead with his wife and kiddies as a doting father and husband. Great.
Any
football.
Boys in there? Please, fingers crossed.
Question without notice. Good question.
I really hope so. I would love to see another Lappin running around at Carlton. Now, Tone, we are here to review Carlton's loss to Geelong at GMHBA Stadium.
Easy for you to say, Tone.
Exactly. Just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? 28 points. I think we, in all honesty, have to agree that that is a margin that flatters Geelong. To underscore that point, I'm going to read out the scoreline. 11-7-73 to the Cats, 5-15-45. In other words, 18 scoring shots to 20. Carlton had their opportunities to get back into the game, stay in the game and actually pull ahead, but wayward kicking is always going to cruel you.
Proved very costly, Tone, the final analysis. And fair to say, this was a game where Geelong probably dominated proceedings for that first 15 minutes of the game, and then they held sway for the last 10 or 15 as well as they pulled away.
Yeah.
They had 4 goals on the board before Carlton had blinked, and it looked ominous for the visitors. Might just say, Tony, in terms of GMHBA Stadium, I don't think the venue did Carlton supporters too many favours, because we hear constantly the argument or the knock on games being played at Princess Park is that Carlton is a 40,000 plus crowd puller.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, GMHBA Stadium, I think, has a capacity of 34. So why we were playing there is anyone's guess. However, that's an argument for another day. But in answer to your question, I think either side of those key periods of the game, you know, early in the first, late in the last, I thought the Carlton team really, really held sway. And were it not for a few errant shots on goal, would have come away with a most improbable, unlikely victory.
It was in the offing, it seemed to be.
It was. Yeah. And the game went on. It was a remainder contest until the death. So it was a hard-fought affair. And, after that initial launch by Geelong, it was pretty much a 2-3 goal ball game for most of it. So Yes, you rue the opportunities missed. You know, we were talking off here earlier about some of the shots on goal that, you know, I can remember Paddy Dow having a crack at one, the ball just fading left on the run. And you think, gee whiz, if he, you know, he had another year in the gym to get that, you know, power through the core.
Yeah.
You know, that ball would have gone, you know, like an exocet straight through the middle. And you look at all those little half chances that weren't taken.
I think, yeah, Samo, you can put Samo into that column as well. Also, you know, it's poise that comes with experience. And it's just taking that, you know, half a second, that second to realise that you're in the clear. And you shoot truly. But there was one goal. Let's talk about two goals, Tony, because I think these are either emblematic of things to come. Hopefully, we really hope. Kerr's first goal was a magnificent kick.
What a cracker it was! You know, he was hugging the boundary line. You know, and there wasn't much daylight between the goals. But the kid, you know, we talked about, you know, poise a moment ago. Well, gee whiz, he showed great poise and the capacity to assess the situation and to go back deliberately and, you know, it never looked like missing. It was a glorious kick at a time when Carlton really needed a goal. A fabulous moment for the young boy, and what a way to bring up your first for the club. Laurie would have been looking down with enormous glee. The other goal that you were alluding to, I think, Tone, was the third quarter goal of Dave Cunningham. It happened late in the third, and again, it was a big goal for the club. But if you're looking... I remember thinking about it at the time and then having a look back a little bit later on. And what I loved about that goal was the players that were involved in the setting up of that goal at Cunningham. And you had, you know, players like Petrevsky Seaton, Charlie Curnow, Paddy Dow. I think O'Brien may have been in on it as well. Well, that's Carlton's future there.
Yeah.
You know, five players contributing to a big goal for the club. And you look at that and you think, blimey, that is the future here.
Yeah.
And you would have to think there's going to be a lot of goals scored involving that, you know, that very, very promising quintet. And it was great to see.
Well, not only that, Tony, I just want to make the point that those players represented themselves well on Saturday night and a ground that none of them would have played at before because we hadn't been there in 21 years. But especially coming off the Melbourne loss, which was a right bollocksing, let's not put too fine a point on it, they'd obviously responded to what coaching staff, in particular Brendan Bolton, had said during the week. And, okay, if we put that four-goal start to Geelong to one side, Carlton were competitive for the majority of the evening in a hard-fought, torrid contest. It was dour. But there were heads over ball. There were sacrificial acts. There were 1%ers. All that sort of stuff that supporters want to see were there.
Well, very true. Very true. And you know, you mentioned Melbourne, Tone, and you talk about the shellacking we copped the week before. Look, fair to say that, you know, after half time of that match against the Red Legs, the team really fell away, just wasn't there. And yet when you saw what Melbourne did to Adelaide the following week, I think it's fair to say that they are a bona fide contender for the premiership this year. And I said before the weekend that Melbourne to me looked like it had that really great core of hard nuts around the footy. And, you know, you think of Lewis and Bernie Vince and, Jack Viney's back now, Petrarca's there, Jones. They're all really, really good players. But they're hard competitors too. And I think they're where we want to be. They're probably a little bit more advanced. You look at our spread across the ball. You have Cripps there. Ed Curnow, you know, had a great year. But, you know, we're sadly missing Murph. Gibbs, obviously, we moved on. That was a decision the club made.
Doherty's one of those, you know, senior or old heads on younger shoulders.
Very true. Yeah. So there are mitigating factors. But, you know, looking at, as I said, what Melbourne did to the Crows, you'd come away thinking, well, geez, you know, I mean, we were bad that game, but Melbourne aren't too bad either.
Yeah.
You know, they are impressive. And I think they're going to go deep into the season, Melbourne. I really do.
Yeah, and they just seem like a tight, you know, unified team with a lot to play for.
Not that we should be talking about them, Tony.
No,
it's all about
exactly,
us.
Exactly. So, look, Tone... I think we can agree that Carlton were brave, didn't take the opportunities that were presented, but it was a much better effort than it was the week before. And as you said, glimpses of a generation coming through that are hopefully the foundation of years of success. And you know, Samo's game I thought was notable. I watch him very closely because I just find him a really fascinating player to watch.
He's so poised, isn't he?
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to get flustered, and his use of the footy is so clean, you know. And, what you said's right. You know, I think for supporters at the moment, I agree with what you're saying. It's nice to look at the future and to look forensically at it. And you see moments in games where exceptional players like that do great things. And you just know all that's missing here is, you know, games and years experience. And it can only get better.
Well, exactly. Better. You're just waiting for that moment where it all gels. It's not going to be this year. I think you can rightfully say that. But next year's success is not going to happen without this year's challenges. And I think you've just got to play a long game with the Blues at the moment, Tone. It's going to pay off. Now, Tone, your job is to give us the 1, 2, 3 votes.
Yes, it's been renamed the Kiss of Death. Unfortunately, I've actually offered a thinly veiled backhander to both Shay and Nick Graham.
Yeah,
both been omitted in the weeks after I graciously
anointed them. Vote.
So I preface these votes with a most fervent apology. But I gave one vote. You know, we've talked about the youth at length here, Tone.
Yeah.
The guy at the other end, you know, how old is he now? 34, 33, 34 years just, young.
Nah.
The little bloke in the number 6, Cade Simpson, couldn't go past his performance off halfback. He's fast approaching 300 games for the Carlton Football Club. What a great player. You talk about Skinny Lappin, you know. Here's another fellow who, it's by his physical frame, defies logic. I gave him one vote. I gave two votes to Liam Jones, and we will talk about him a little later in the context of the Sydney game, but I thought he was fantastic in his in the timing of his runs to get that fist through to spoil.
Yeah.
I thought he was a very effective player in defence. Three votes to, well, the man that's taken all before him, particularly in the absence of Murph as leader of the club, and he's got to be not only up there in the club BNF, but I reckon he's a smoky for the Brownlow. I really do.
Yeah.
Patrick Cripps. It's just volume. Like, it's the sheer volume of, you know, contested possession, contested ball that he wins, and his capacity to break tackles and somehow find a way. And, I mean, he's a guy that's up against, you know, the masters of it. You know, Ablett, Selwood, Dangerfield, all strong players around the ball. And yet they had trouble containing Cripps at the weekend. Well,
that's a true mark of a champion. He's very hard to contain, and he gives any opposition match selection committee headaches.
Very true.
And, you know, how old is he? He's 21.
Oh, yeah, 22. And I heard, I can't remember who it was now, but I heard one of the Geelong players interviewed afterwards saying that at half-time the Cripps was very much on their agenda as a player that they really had to tighten up on. But try as they might in the second half, they couldn't. You know, he's a phenomenal footballer, a great competitor, a real hard nut around the contest, and aren't we lucky we've got him?
Which is as if that the number 9 jumper at Carlton wasn't storied enough, revered enough. He's just taken it to the next level. Coin a phrase that young people love to use. Now, Tone, we're going to just before we get to previewing the Carlton Sydney game, which is Friday 7:50 PM at the SCG. I imagine that'll be on free to air. I'm not sure, but I imagine it would be. Anyway, we'll see. Can we just have a quick injury update? You mentioned Nick Graham. He's injured in the VFL.
Yes, came off with calf tightness, and I think is subjected to a test. Look, there's quite a number of players that are on the edge of a return. Another one's Alex Silvani, who's been
excellent.
Gone for a long time, who again is up for a test this week.
That's for the VFL, is it?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
We need his hardness, certainly around the contest. And then you've got players that are probably likely to emerge after the bye weekend. And I'm speaking of Caleb Marchbank. Also, Levi. Big Levi should be right after that horrible rattling of the rib cage. And an outside chance that both Kennedy and Jared Pickett could be right to go. So
very
there's a lot of players coming back,
that.
And we need them back.
Well, yes. You mentioned the protection that Cripper needs. You know, when he's in and under, when he's just, you know, the centre of the stoppages, etc. To have a hard nut like Kennedy acting as, you know, his Secret Service.
Yes, yes.
Would be most welcome.
Yeah, the ruthless young blood of the Carlton contingent.
Exactly. And I'm very much looking forward to Pickett getting a run and just seeing the cut of his jib. Somebody that we won't, unfortunately, and I think this is exemplifies the cruelties of our game, Tone, Tom Williamson.
Horrid run of outs for Tom Williamson. You know, he's battled, I think, a calf injury through most of the year. And we learn now, Tony, that the weekend he suffered a back spasm of sorts. There's obviously an issue there. They've had him checked out. And the upshot of it all is that it's season over for the boy from Ararat. So there was another young player, you know, a rebounding halfback flanker that, you know, we really needed to get games into. And particularly with the Doc out.
Yeah.
Gee whiz, he would have had that great opportunity to really, you know, find his niche. Look, he's still young and I'm sure he'll get over this latest injury setback. It's just par for the course, the lot of a league footballer this day and age. But, you know, it's just a shame for the young kid that he won't be there to really push his case as a mainstay off halfback as a rebounding player. But,
well, speaking of rebounding off the halfback, Kieran Byrne.
Yeah, well, he's still 3 weeks away, unfortunately. Again, you know, there's been a lot of injury this year and a lot of players have just been really, really set back. It's not unique to Carlton. There are a lot of players that are, you know, unavailable, you know, through illness and injury around the traps.
Is it just me? I mean, you made the point there, Tom. Injuries are not, like, this season, are not 1 or 2 week things.
No, they seem to be long-termers. And I don't know if that necessarily reflects the changing in trends in the game. Greater minds than me can answer that. So, but obviously what we have seen is a greater incidence of injury across the board. So something's amiss somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, Murph, we have a bye after the Sydney game. We're about to get to that. He should be ready to go, we think.
Yeah. Well,
what, looks, 1 or 2 weeks after the
bye. Yes. Yes. It's probably a 3 or 4 week injury. And again, what a frustrating year it's been for the Carlton captain. Hopefully, he gets over that, and we, you know, we want to see him get games in for the duration of the season. As I said, Tony, earlier, we need all hands on deck, really, at this stage. And great challenge for Brendan Bolton and the Carlton players. You know, you talked about showing that resolve against Geelong. Well, can they back it up against the Swans this week and after the bye come back, refreshed and ready to go again? That's a great challenge for the Carlton players and for the coach to get this team cherry right for the run home.
Well, the bye was good to us last year. I think we won a game coming off it.
Yes.
Against a team that was about to go into it.
Yes.
But Carlton v Sydney, as I said, Friday night, 7:50. A couple of big players have got to stop. Josh Kennedy, of course, he's class. He's all class in the midfield. He's going to take some stopping. But one of the more interesting, I'd say the most interesting matchup in this is going to be Liam Jones and Buddy Franklin.
Yes, well, you've called it correct in both instances. Just getting back to Kennedy, you'd have to think of Kennedy Cripps head-to-head.
Oh, that's one for the purists.
Yeah, it's one for the purists. And isn't it great that in this conversation that we can actually talk about the man-on-man individual subplots?
Yeah.
Because I think what the game is sadly lacking are those great individual duels, the little games within a game.
Well, Silvani Ablett, for example, Silvani Ablett, back.
You know, Vanderhaar Knights, if you want to go back further, you know, Djokovic Carey, you know, when West Coast played North. People went to games to see those individual contests. And if you talk to players of yesteryear, they lament the fact that the nature of the game today doesn't allow for those sorts of individual duels. That it's all about numbers around the ball, and unfortunately, players get sucked up into the vortex, I suppose, and they aren't given the opportunity to show their flair and finesse. And so, when we think about that, we really do genuinely relish the prospect of Cripps, Kerr, and Jones and Franklin. And Tone, you may recall last year it was a horrendous foray into the Sydney Cricket Ground for that game against the Swans. We were absolutely towel after half time in particular. And Buddy Franklin actually did a number on Liam Jones. And I had the opportunity to speak to Liam not long after that game, reflecting on what was a great season for him. You know, the Cinderella man to come back from oblivion to play so well. But the game on Franklin and an early game on Tom Hawkins were still grating with him. And I just wanted to share with you the comments that he had for that game on Franklin in Sydney last year, where he said, and I quote, "It was just a position thing. I was standing in front of Franklin in stages and sometimes didn't have time to get back. I would have been better off standing behind him, given the clean ball movement the Swans had, so that I wasn't blindsided." So there's a player that's thought about what happened and has hopefully learned from a mistake. So if in fact fate does decree that Jones stands Franklin at the SCG this weekend, won't it be absolutely fascinating to see how he goes about his business in trying to curb Buddy's influence?
Yes.
You know, and so it's just a intriguing one-on-one contest that looms.
Well, there's a couple of things there. The rub of the green is going to be interesting because for the backman, playing from behind always risks giving away the free, especially to somebody as theatrical as Buddy and as, you know, as noticeable as Buddy, I guess. So there's that. There's what I've noticed about Liam Jones too is his decision making in that split second, whether or not he fists the ball goes to ground, it becomes a 50-50, or he marks. His decision in that regard is getting a lot better. His judgment is getting a lot better, and he's backing himself into the mark.
Yes,
and that is a good thing because he's a good strong mark.
He is, and it's a good point you've made because he's got that capacity to cover the ground quickly to get to the contest. And I was talking to you off here earlier about Rance at Richmond, how he has that capacity to leave his opponent, anticipate a situation in front of him, and get across to spoil his non-direct opponent as the ball's coming in, and rebounding beautifully for his team. Well, Jones is like that. He has a capacity to do that, to cover the ground quickly. I think the key to it for Liam Jones is the timing.
Yeah.
Knowing when to make that run and just how to time his runs perfectly to affect the spoil or take a mark because he is a great mark too.
But do you run off Buddy?
Oh yeah, he's a very good mover. He's a very good mover. I mean, Buddy's he's a great athlete. And but Liam Jones, you know, for a big man, he's quick.
Yeah.
So I just think it's fascinating. You know, that anticipated duel. In saying that, Tone, it could be all blown out of the water if Sam Rowe gets the gig on Franklin.
True.
So I'll have to wait and see. But certainly the Jones-Franklin duel is one that really appeals. I'd love to see it happen.
Well, look, there's been some great games in Sydney. There's been a final up there, or was it a final?
Game where Judd turned it in the second half. Do you remember that?
We were in it.
Yes, it was a great individual performance by C. Judd.
And let's not mention 1995, one of two games we lost in a row.
That's
one
true.
Of which was in Sydney.
Yeah, that's true. And then the follow-up against St Kilda. I think there was an inquisition after Sydney game. And then St Kilda, I can remember leaving VFL Park in a sod with my head down. And who would have thought, Tone? 16 wins, including the flag after that.
Thank you.
Football is a funny game.
Ain't it just? Now, we just hope you're watching wherever it may be because stranger things have happened. But Tone, something very exciting to announce.
Well, Tony, it's great news. You would have seen and heard, no doubt, the elevation or the induction of the great Wayne Johnston into the Australian Football Hall of Fame.
What on earth took so long?
It's a great question, Tone. Who would know? But at least it's happened. And what a player Wayne Johnston was. Four-time premiership player. In fact, little known fact, Tony, he's the only Carlton player of his generation to play in all four, 79, 81, 82, 87. No other Carlton player in that period managed all four. Plenty played in three.
Yeah, that is remarkable.
It is remarkable. Testament to his longevity as much as anything. You know, a player who gave absolutely everything for his club. The bigger the occasion, the better he liked it.
Yeah.
It was fabulous to see him so acknowledged in front of his family and close friends with his induction into the Hall. And I'm really privileged to say, Tone, that that Wayne has given his time to be interviewed for an episode of Our History here at the club that will be going to air very, very soon, where he talks about his life and times at the Carlton Football Club. And it is fascinating, I promise you.
That is, so you got a one-on-one fireside chat with the Dominator.
With the Dominator.
And nothing was off the table?
No, everything was up for discussion. There's some fascinating insights into, you know, players like Bruce Dool, McClure, the coaches, you know, Jesilenko, Park and Robert Walls. You know, his approach going into grand finals. You know, I can recall asking him at one point, you know, how was it that you were able to get yourself up for the big occasion? And he simply responded, well, why wouldn't you get yourself up for the big occasion? You know, the bigger the better, as far as he's concerned, it's what you play for. And look, he was tremendous to talk to. Had a great power of recall. He was certainly up for the chat. And, you know, you're thinking, I was sitting here, Tone, and thinking, this is football royalty across the desk. I mean, he was voted number 8 in the top 10 Carlton players in 150 years.
Wow.
So that's rarefied air, you know, and he's up there. And, you know, to be inducted into the Hall, knowing that he's now in there with the likes of Jesilenko, Big Nick, and Barassi, who are legends of the Hall.
Yeah.
Well, he acknowledged that, and he said, well, Jesilenko was probably the man that got me to Carlton and the person I most look up to. So it means a lot to him. And isn't it fabulous to see a player of his worth be so honoured by the by Australian rules football?
Well, and good on him for, as I said, that fireside chat with you, Tony DeBolfo, in your capacity as Carlton historian. Now, you may have mentioned this to me off air, but the fascinating thing about Wayne Johnson was he was playing senior football at what age?
Well, he was mixing it with the big boys as a 14 or 15 year old for Wandon, which was quite extraordinary. And then he ended up, what I didn't realise was that he was actually a Cobu boy, which few people know. So that was in Carlton's area.
Like Robert Walls.
Yep. He grew up in Cobu. And at a very young age, his family relocated to Wandon. He's not 100% sure why. He knows that they wanted to get out of Melbourne. Why it was Wandon is anyone's guess. And then he went to Paran and he starred in the 78 grand final against Preston. And I think Sam Kekovic was playing for Paran in that one.
Yeah.
You know, sweet VFA, there was a lot of rough stuff going on. And Wayne had experienced it, stuff off the ball from the early days in the Yarra Valley at Wandon and again at VFA level. So by the time he got to Carlton and played his first game, he was 21. And as he said, I was ready for it. I was ready for the scrap. And yep. You know, when you think of Kernan coming over from Glenelg later in the piece, there is something to be said for that delayed introduction to the league footy, that they were grounded, they were physically ready to cope with the rigours. And was he up for it? Wayne Johnson, gee whiz, he was one of the all-time greats. And I think our listeners will find his recollections fascinating.
Absolutely. A great player. And as you said, four-time premiership player. That will be on next week for the bye. There'll be no two tones.
There'll be no two tones. And I think it'll be coming up very soon, maybe in the next day or so, Tone, of the podcast. So we'll keep an ear out for that. All good Carlton people out there in podcast land.
Well, yes. Great work. Thank you for that, Tone. We'll catch you in 2 weeks' time here at the Two Tones.
Take a well-earned breather, Tony. I'm sure you will.
And thanks, too, to our great producer, Lucy Jamison. She's also having a break, well-earned one, too. And we'll catch you in a fortnight here at the Two Tones. In the meantime, please do yourself a favour, as Molly would say, and track down that Wayne Johnson interview, available on carltonfc.com.au. Catch you in a fortnight. Go Blues.